Hello and welcome to Banfield. Heartbreaking and desperate pleas for help at the Astro World Festival in Houston, Texas. Phrases like, I feel trapped, I can't breathe, and there's someone dead in there. Here's how some of the concert goers described it.
When we were pulling people out, I'm hitting cameraman. Like, hey, we need to get them out. Like, people just like sitting on my shoulder. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it wasn't enough.
There was points where I was like literally leaning back, like if it wasn't the Matrix, like it was just crowds of people just going back and forth.
Well, I couldn't breathe for a good 2 minutes. I had to like throw someone's arm off of me because he was trying to get his girlfriend out because she was just getting, everyone was just pouncing on her.
There was even an instance where like when we're, or, you know, we're opening up a, you know, a mosh pit for another song, some guy was just like blood just hurling.
The chaotic crush of bodies resulted in 8 dead, dozens and dozens more injured. Those killed ranged in age from just 14 to 27. Houston's Mayor Sylvester Turner says an investigation into this tragedy has already begun. But the truth is, there likely won't be a whole lot new recovered. The performer at the show, Travis Scott, has a history of arrests for encouraging his fans to be reckless and to bypass security. And Houston's chief of police, Troy Finner, says he even met with Scott before the concert to talk about, you guessed it, crowd safety. And yet 40 minutes after the police declared the concert a mass casualty event, Travis Scott was still on the stage performing. Should Scott have done more to stop the carnage? Should the promoter, Live Nation, have done a better job preparing for all contingencies? Will any of them have to face the music now that the music has stopped? I'm joined by News Nation's Brian Enten, who's been on this story. He is in Houston live tonight. So I am starting to smell a big legal mess for a lot of the parties involved, Brian, and you can confirm this in that the promoters have been told they have to stop cleaning up. They have to stop tampering with evidence. Tell me what it looks like there and what you're seeing from a first-person account.
Well, this is horrific, Ashley. The stories we have heard today over and over again are unbelievable. A little while ago, I talked to a 16-year-old girl. She said she was basically trampled and suffocated. The only way she made it out of this venue, she says someone had to throw her over the fence. Take a look out here. This is the vigil that has started here out on the block all around the venue here in Houston. 8 people confirmed dead. We believe that number is going to grow because there are so many people seriously injured. And one more thing I want to show you real quick, Ashley. You mentioned that they are keeping everything in place here because there's an ongoing criminal investigation. We're just going to come here. I'll show you through the fence. The police have asked Live Nation, do not move anything at this point because this investigation is ongoing. They want to retrace everything that happened. They've now got the surveillance video, and they say this is, again, an ongoing criminal investigation.
So, Brian, normally when you, you know, arrive upon a crime scene as a reporter, it's very clear where you can and can't go. There's usually yellow crime tape up, but that is a massive crime scene. So how have they been able to, other than the chain link fence, assess everything else? Because even where you're standing, there were people running. There were people early on who were crushing and pushing and trying to, you know, get through fences and barricades. So is there any semblance of law enforcement out there right now?
The simple answer to that is no. And let me show you again. I mean, it's pretty much just quiet inside the venue. What's interesting is they did start cleaning up. Despite this being a criminal investigation, they were taking things away. And that is when the police came forward and said, stop. Leave everything where it is, and you see it's quiet in here tonight, but a lot of the equipment is already gone. We have confirmed that Live Nation now has handed over all of the surveillance video, so we know that tonight the police are going over that, and they have been meeting with survivors in the hospital, getting all of their stories about exactly what happened.
Well, about that surveillance video, Brian, here's the hard part. I'm sure that there are buildings all around you that have surveillance video in every single direction. But we have plenty of video of what happened that night. And it just looks like people having fun. It is so hard to see what is happening at chest level when someone is being lifted off the ground. Their feet are no longer able to support them. They start to turn sideways. They eventually go horizontal. None of that could really be seen by videos this close. Have you had any indication that this is going to be a hell of an investigation? And when I say that, I mean a really difficult one.
It's going to be difficult because, as you mentioned, yes, there's some video, but the people were packed in so closely. There was one young man who explained it to us today. He was up near the stage. He had his arms up like this. He could not even move his arms. He could not raise his arms above his head because he was packed in so close. And he said the issue some people had was if they kneeled down or if they fell, that was basically the end, because they would get trampled, they would suffocate, they couldn't come back up. But again, yes, the video is going to be difficult because the cell phone videos we've seen are just close up because you can't see much, so many people packed together. One thing is, this was being streamed on Apple. I'm not sure if you've seen this, Ashley. It was on YouTube, it was on Apple. They've got the entire concert streamed, and there are different angles that the cameras were up on podium shooting from. So perhaps zooming in, they'll be able to get a better idea of what was happening deep in the crowd.
Well, again, here's what's so devastating, and I think this speaks to what our program is really going to be about tonight, because when Jerry Springer talks to us later, he's going to tell us that many of the accounts from 40 years ago during the Who concert were no different than the accounts today, and that is, it's not a stampede. It is not, you know, a rush or a trampling necessarily. It is a slow squeeze to death, like a boa constrictor. And you can't always see that happening. Sometimes it just looks like people having a whole lot of fun and they're gasping for air, but it looks like they're shouting. They're putting their hands up saying, stop, stop. But it looks like they're saying, go, go, and you're the greatest. So I just don't know what any of that surveillance video from any of those vantage points behind you, Brian, is going to help.
Yeah, so many of the concert goers we've spoken to that go to many of these festivals say it's not uncommon for someone to pass out, for someone to overheat, for someone to need water, for medics to have to come in. But every single one told us they have never seen anything like this. Again, 8 confirmed dead, dozens and dozens injured. But it's so interesting being out here at the memorial today, and people are coming constantly that were at the show. Not one of them told me, gosh, I wasn't near this. I'm not sure what happened. It seemed calm from where I was standing. No, everyone said this got very, very bad. And basically they all said they knew that this turned south and that they said the police just weren't doing enough. Remember, this went on for 38 minutes. Firefighters declared a mass casualty event. And it wasn't until 38 minutes later that the concert was shut down.
Do me a favor, Brian, now that you've just sort of moved to the different angle, I have a long line I can see behind you of what look like lit candles. And if you could just sort of walk me along what people have brought. And I know that it's like a playbook. When you're mourning something like this, you bring distinct messages, sometimes concert paraphernalia. Show me some of the things that people have brought and what they've been saying.
Let me walk you down, Ashley. I mean, this goes all the way down the block. It's so sad. So many families have been out here. Look at this. You see these shoes up here. I noticed these earlier. Apparently, a victim's shoes says, rest in peace. I thought this was interesting. It says, rage forever. That's referring to Travis Scott because he's the one who tells the crowd to rage. Notoriously, that is his thing. He tells people to rage. He has encouraged fans in the past to actually push down barricades and storm his own concerts. So that rage is what that means. But you see all of these candles, so many flowers out here, a lot of people coming out here crying today. You can see a picture here of one of the victims up on the fence. These are people from all over the country who came to this concert. Another young man here. I mean, it is just so, so terribly sad.
Brian, can you see any names?
Because so many people just came here to have a good time.
I don't know if they, just go back to the young woman who you showed me beforehand. Do you see names connected to these pictures?
So I do not see a name on this person in particular, but this man down here, this one says, rest in peace, rest in love, John. And you can see his picture here. A high school in Houston also put out a statement Saturday saying one of its students, a ninth grader, had been killed, a 14-year-old by the name of John Hilgert. So this is referring to a young man. I mean, these were young people in high school. And this is actually Madison. Madison Dubisky, my producer here, showing me her name. So it's terrible.
Madison,
I mean, it's terrible
Dubisky.
To think what these families are going through right now.
Our director actually is saying, I think the man behind you was from Naperville. Do you see something on the poster there that says he's from Naperville?
Let me see. It's John Hilgert here, 14-year-old boy, high school from Houston here, Memorial High School. It says, our hearts go out to the student's family and to his friends and our staff at Memorial. This is a terrible loss. And the entire school is grieving. So again, I mean, it's terrible. It's been terrible out here all day long.
Walk me down a little further because I can see that the candles continue. And I always want to know what the memorial artifacts are. That's, you know, some people are really drawn to this and they bring very specific items as well as the beautiful candles and the flowers.
Let's look here. There's a card here. There's several cards out here. This one's open, so I don't feel bad reading it, but saying that their hearts hurt for what happened to the people who were there. So sorry for their families. There's a Bible out here. We can keep walking down. A lot of candles and flowers. I just want to see if there's any other notes out here. Here's another sealed card down here, Ashley, telling the victims to rest in peace. And then a card here. Rest easy, John, faith, love to all. A number of different people have signed this. It looks like it's for a number of different victims that people are just
Brian,
signing.
So, Brian, that's the other
for, but,
thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's getting late. It's 10:13 Eastern time. But what's it been like there all day? Like, what kind of people have come? Did people come who had been to the concert? Are these complete strangers? Are these friends and family? Like, how is this community responding to this disaster?
So everyone is heartbroken, as you can imagine. But no, it hasn't been strangers, and that's been the interesting thing. Everyone we've talked to out here, and we've been out here since 7 o'clock this morning, they've all been people who were at the concert. Remember, there were 50,000 people at the concert on the other side of this fence, and many of the people who were at the back, not close to the stage, were able to get away very, very quickly, and many of them have been coming out today to sort of pay their respects. A lot of young people, 15, 16, 17-year-olds.
Oh, I mean, I hope they learn what can happen, and, you know, shame on us. It's happened before. How could we not have learned? How could we not have put better measures in place to protect these kids? They knew nothing about what it really means to rage and break through barricades. It's fun. It's not what they, you know, they're invincible, you know, at 14. I'm going to read something real quickly, Brian. Live Nation honestly can smell the blood in the water at this point, and legally speaking, they should. I want to read what their statement was today that they released. It said, we continue to support and assist local authorities in their ongoing investigation so that both the fans who attended and their families can get the answers they want and deserve. And we will address all legal matters at the appropriate time. I think we all know what that means. Brian, is there, you know, I know when you end up on a tragedy like this, it's a lot to take in. You're playing two roles. You're trying to gather information and facts, and you're also trying to process what's really happened there and the grief. And I'm just wondering, you know, having landed in Houston, how is that community doing, and how are the people who get close to that particular site? How do they seem to be putting this in perspective?
I think they're upset. I think people are sad, but I really believe from everyone we've spoken to today, they are angry and they want answers. I go back again to that 37 minutes That is a number that we've heard over and over again. Why did it take 37 minutes from when it was first declared a mass casualty event for them to shut this concert down? And there is this other piece of cell phone video today that a lot of people are talking about. You had the people on the ground dead and dying, and there were so many people inside this venue packed so closely together, the medics couldn't get to the injured. And there's this one video of this small ambulance. It looks small anyway because it's in this sea of people and it can't move. You can barely even see the red lights, and it is just surrounded on all sides by thousands and thousands of people. And I think that just sums the whole thing up. There was no way for the help to get in.
Yeah, and I saw people dancing on first responders vehicles that were trying to get through the crowd. And of course, hindsight is 20/20. Of course, not everyone had the perspective that those who were crushed to death had, but this is what happens in these mass events, and they cannot be taken lightly in advance. It's called a contingency plan for a reason. It's called a safety plan for a reason. Brian, thank you for rushing there and for gathering that information and then for being our eyes on the ground. Brian Enten, doing the job for us yet again tonight. Thanks, Brian. You know, it's one thing to see the images on TV, and it is another to hear reporters tell you what happened on Friday night. But it is something completely different to have been there, bearing witness to the sights and the smells of the carnage. It is a harrowing perspective, and my next guest has experienced both. Joey Guerra is the music critic for the Houston Chronicle. He was there to cover the event. He will be with me after the break. Welcome back to our special coverage of the Travis Scott concert tragedy. The official finger pointing has already begun in the courts. In fact, it happened within hours. You know, this is the kind of story that is both tragic, but it is also a story of consequence. And some of the people who were there will likely give the accounts that will end up in court and hopefully hold people responsible for what happened. I want to introduce Joey Guerra. He is a music critic for the Houston Chronicle newspaper. He's with me now live. He was there to cover the concert. What an innocent assignment. Instead, he bore witness to what we are all now seeing on the news. Joey, thank you for being with me. And first of all, may I just say I am so sorry that you have gone through the experience that you've gone to, And I say that because I understand. I was a part of 9/11, and it's very, very traumatic to have lived through something like that, so it's not lost on us. Can I just ask you to tell me a little bit about, you know, how the evening unfolded from your perspective, having arrived there as a job and having left there now as someone who's likely a witness?
Right, right. I mean, I think for me, you know, this is not an unusual situation, you know, in the job that I do. This was the third time I covered this particular event. You know, when I got there early in the afternoon, it seemed like the normal Astroworld that we've had in Houston for the past couple years. It felt like that throughout the day. And honestly, from my perspective, I was not in the thick of where all this horrific, you know, all these horrific things were happening. I was not in that. I was still on the ground, but I was back kind of behind that big swell of people. So where I was at, the crowd was kind of trickling out. You could move around. There were food concessions behind me where people were in line getting food. When I see these images, it's just shocking to me because myself and no one around me had any idea that this was going on. You know, at the end of the show, when he finished, we left. You know, there was no sense of urgency, no sense of, you know, something bad happening. We walked out, you know, there were mounted police officers at the entrance, just kind of there, making sure everybody was, you know, doing okay. We walked out, people were still kind of hanging back inside, waiting for their friends, you know, on the phone. So to get home and see that this had been happening while we were watching the show really was a shock. I mean, I was in disbelief seeing these videos.
You know, Joey, I think what you're saying is extraordinarily critical. And that is because that may end up being a defense for many in the security community. It looks one way from the angle we're seeing right now, if you're right in the thick of it, and it looks entirely different from just, say, a few hundred yards away where you were. So do you have an empathy for those who said, keep the concert going, the cameraman who said, get off my podium? Let me show you a clip that I have a hard time looking at. I'm heartbroken when I see these two concertgoers climbing onto the cameraman's platform screaming, there are people dying in here. And the cameraman continues to try to do his job because maybe he just thinks they're there to cause trouble. And maybe with his headphones, he can't hear what they're saying. Let me show you the clip first. I want to ask you about it after. Take a look.
That's okay, we'll see you real quick. Take me this door.
So that's why I asked the question. The cameraman is, being vilified by people, but could he not have been you? Could he have not seen anything that seemed out of sorts?
Yeah, I mean, I think particularly when you're there to do a job, I mean, his focus is on what he's supposed to be doing. He doesn't want to get fired. He doesn't want to get in trouble. You can see that he has the headphones on. And he's basically, I don't think he's even aware of what they're saying to him. He's just trying to get them off of his platform. I mean, I would not be surprised in the least if he had no clue what was going on. I mean, if you're on a camera, your focus has to be on what you're filming, on Travis, on whatever part of the stage your camera is pointed at. He cannot move
it's
from
just,
there.
Yeah.
So,
it's yeah. so different. It's why people say, they were trampled or they were drug addled or it's a slow squeeze that's quite invisible unless you are in it for many of these people. I just want to play one other thing for you, and that is how many concerts, and we've just scraped the surface here, but how many concerts where the performer has seen what's happening directly in front and has put a stop to it like that? I mean, instantaneously. So I want to play that and then ask you a quick question on the other side. Take a look.
Hold on one second. Does that kid need somewhere to sit? Give that kid a real seat.
Security, why aren't you paying attention? Like, for real.
You're all right, man. Everybody back up. Look. Watch out!
Drama!
Y'all f***ing idiots on out of bars. Pick those girls up, bro. Pick the girls up!
Stop, stop, stop. Someone's fainting again. Excuse me, get it right in the middle. This happened last night as well. Are you alright? Can you see? Can someone look like they care, please?
So, Joey, I purposely ended with Adele because a lot of people will just dismiss this as rappers and rockers, and that's what happens at these out-of-control events. You are a music critic. You know all too well, even at an Adele concert, she had to stop and make sure someone was safe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do have to say, though, being at this Travis Scott performance, he stopped the show multiple times to make sure people were okay. I very specifically remember him saying, there's someone passed out here, there's someone passed out here. I need security or somebody to come help this person. He waited until he actually saw security or someone come to that person's aid. As people were circling that person and maybe trying to get in and help them, people from the crowd, he told people, don't touch him, leave him alone, leave him alone. He did do this more than once in this performance.
And yet he riled everyone up beforehand and didn't ultimately stop it. He's got questions to answer himself. Joey Guerra, I'm very thankful for your first person account. And I'm also just sending out my love and prayers to you for a recovery. I mean, that's a lot that you've gone through, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
You know, Travis Scott's concert sold out this year's Astroworld in minutes. And that was because promising scenes like this from 2019 Astroworld. Feast your eyes. It's a mix of news clips and promoter video that is less about the music than about the experience. A raucous and rowdy and show up early and stake your claim on your real estate type of experience. This is not an experience that is unique to Astroworld. On December 3rd, 1979, the legendary rock band The Who played Riverfront Coliseum in Cincinnati. And the vast majority of the roughly 18,000 tickets that were sold were something called general admission, also known as, you guessed it, festival seating. It's a real misnomer, folks, on two counts, because there's nothing festive about it, and it usually does not get you a seat. It gets you standing room only, wherever you can find it. So back then, at the Who concert, it was a freezing cold night. Thousands pressed against the arena doors, trying to get in, trying to get warm, and trying to rock out. And in Cincinnati, as in Houston, people were crushed in slow motion. 11 people died. My next guest spent much of the 70s on the Cincinnati City Council before becoming the city's mayor and then launching a long television career. Jerry Springer, thank you for coming on tonight. Thought of sure. you as I reread the Rolling Stone article from 40 plus years ago. Why?
Yeah.
If this happened then, why, Jerry, could it have possibly happened now?
Well, the truth is, it probably isn't an excuse, because people now know, particularly the people who run these concerts and have these festivals, they know what it's going to be like. At the situation in Cincinnati, I remember I had introduced legislation which would prohibit festival seating in an indoor arena, because the Who concert was in the Riverfront Coliseum, which was indoors. And I didn't want festival seating, because that puts a premium, since no one's assigned a particular seat, to getting there early. And the doors were going to open, I don't know, maybe 6-7 o'clock in the evening, but people were getting there at 3 in the afternoon because they wanted to be up front. So you're basically incentivizing the crowd to get there early. So the crush took place even before the concert ever started. Before the doors opened, people were crushed to death. As you said, 11 people tragically died. We should have learned something from that. If you're going to have a massive event where thousands and thousands and thousands of people, you can control it. Even if you're going to have, let's say, a mash pit, then control the number of people that are allowed to be in a fenced-off mash pit. Have enough security there. We had, now I admit times have changed, but you weren't allowed to bring in alcohol and you weren't allowed to bring in any drugs. And there were only 6 arrests made for kids that brought in the drugs. I understand times have changed, but still the people that run these cars, now the promoters, they want to have festival seating. And the reason is, if you have festival seating, you can charge everyone the same price. If you assign tickets, then obviously you can't charge the people sitting in the upper deck as much money as you would charge the people down in front. So therefore, they say everyone pays the same. So they make a ton of money by this. And the premium is on getting there early, getting up front, getting involved in the hoopla. And invariably, people are going to die or at least get hurt. And it's not like we don't know this stuff happens. And that's why, look, I'm not here pointing fingers. I wasn't there. It's not my business. But I do wonder, if you're going to have this event, particularly if you have it every year, for God's sakes, what is the security meeting like the few days before the concert? What was set
That's
up?
A good
were
point.
There fences
and,
set
up? Well, the mayor actually spoke with the artist right before the event about crowd safety. And I'm so glad you brought that up. After the break, Jerry, you're also a lawyer, which people should know because you know of what you speak. But I do want to talk to you about this this nexus. I had no idea this existed, Jerry. When I read this article, I dialed you right away. There was a man who tried to get tickets to that Who concert and was mad because they sold out so fast that he had to do the state, he had to do the rush seating. And he wrote you a letter because you were on council. This was 3 years prior. He'd been at another concert like that. And you were the only city councilor who wrote him back and said you were going to do something about it. And yet still, the city council just couldn't. Well, there you are. That's why you're here with me, to remind you of the good old days, what, 43 years ago.
You do great work, Ashley.
Jerry,
how you found that out.
When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about that, but I'm also going to tap you for your legal expertise, because a duty of care is not just a slogan. It is real. And if you're going to invite 50,000 kind souls into your venue, you have that duty of care. More with Jerry in just a moment. Back now with my special guest, the former Cincinnati City Councilman and former Mayor Jerry Springer. He lived through the Travis Scott Astroworld nightmare decades ago when 11 people were crushed to death at a Who concert in his beloved town of Cincinnati. So I got the letter that was sent to you 3 years before that Who concert. A rock fan who used to go to concerts with his wife all the time. He wrote not only you, but he had carbon paper. Remember that? He carbon copied the city council, the city's public safety director. His name was Richard Klopp. We actually tried to find him and he has since died. But he said this: concerts that I have attended were both sold out on a festival seating or general admission basis. What this means for the promoter is more money. For the concert goer, this means he'll probably have to sit in the aisles or on the floor, jeopardizing his safety and the safety of others. If a fire or general panic were to break out, many, many people would be trampled to death. You were the only person who responded. You were the only person who tried to do something about it. And then 3 years later, you weren't on city council anymore. You weren't the mayor. And this horrifying 11 death incident happened, and then they did ban the festival seating, but Jerry, they overturned the ban 24 years later. Why do you think they would do that?
Oh, I didn't even realize they overturned the ban. I'll have to talk to them. Yeah. I don't understand why they would. It's, well, you know, if you're going to have a huge outdoor area, you're just not going to have seats. So that I understand, but in the alternative, knowing, and we certainly have a history of what these events can turn out, and it can be not just concerts, sporting events, political events, all kinds of things. The security has to be clear. You have to recognize what you're inviting in. It's music, it's young people. They're going to get a little bit wild. They're going to get a little bit crazy. Some of them could be smoking, some of them could be drinking. That is to be expected. So when these cases, if they get to court, when they go to court and they use a reasonable standard of proper care, part of what will determine what is a reasonable standard is there may be a different standard if you're going to have a crowd at a church meeting than there's going to be if you're going to have a crowd at a rock concert. So
but let me tell you something. I found out today that at this Astroworld event, they actually had something called a life safety plan. It was 54 some odd pages, and it outlined showstop procedure, safety spotters and risk assessment, adequate policing and paramedics and barricade configurations, signage. But honestly, all of that meant nothing. It felt as though these safety spotters may not have been on raised platforms where they could see exactly what was happening in the danger spots and then radio immediately to the management and to the artist, stop, lights up, shut it down, get the authorities in place to save people. This is where I say liability is everywhere. And I could see it going all the way down from the venue to the artist and management to even the security staff. Do you agree?
Well, it's entirely possible. Obviously, we have to find out who did what or didn't do what. You can have the greatest plan set out, and what you're telling me is that in this case, there was a plan. What failed is the execution. And then you have to figure out who that was working there or organized this didn't follow the plan. So it's not enough just to say, well, that we were ready for this, but then when it happened, we didn't perform. And that, you know, the court system will figure that out. That is going to be dependent on the testimony, on, as you said, the visual evidence, the evidence of the people that were on the ground. But it just seems to me that you can have 58 pages written down, but just looking at the pictures before the crush started, you know, the question has to be, what's going to happen if the people in the back start pushing to the front? You know, what are you going to have, 12 security guys run there and try and stop it? I mean, it's almost...
And clearly, you need more. I mean, you just need more. You need a better barricade plan. But you know something? I'm so glad that you have this perspective of having lived through this with the Who concert in Cincinnati and then seeing this 40-some-odd years later. I just wish that... I hope you and I aren't going to have this conversation again. I hope we have another conversation about something.
I do hope I'm back in 40 years. I do hope I'm back in 40 years.
Of course you will be, Jerry.
I'm
going to
look great at 120. At 120, I am going to be hot. Oh,
Jerry, thank you. Thank you so much for being here
tonight.
You're great.
Thanks,
Ashley.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Jerry Springer joining us. I mean, it really has a lot of perspective having had that connection to the Who concert disaster. So I'm going to switch gears here because there is this growing chorus saying Aaron Rodgers flat out lied. That's what they're saying. And the three-time MVP is now losing endorsements. But Aaron Rodgers says he's a victim of the woke army and he has his supporters. You are going to hear from one of them next. Did you see it? It was a really big deal. Packers lost a football game yesterday for just the second time this year. I suppose it was bound to happen without Aaron Rodgers on the field. His was he was the league's MVP for 2020, but he got himself sick. He got COVID. So he's in quarantine 10 days. And as per NFL protocol, and you know, really everybody else's, you're out 10 days. He might not have caught it though. Had he been vaccinated? Kind of impossible to be sure about that. But we do know one thing for sure. He has lost an endorsement deal and an even bigger one, State Farm. They're now kind of hanging on by a thread. So it doesn't help when Hall of Famers start laying into you like Terry Bradshaw did. Take a look.
It would have been nice if he'd have just come to the Naval Academy and learned how to be honest.
Yeah.
Learn not to lie, because that's what you did, Aaron. You lied to everyone. I understand immunized. What you were doing was taking stuff that would keep you from getting COVID-19. You got COVID-19. Ivermectin is a cattle dewormer. Sorry, folks, that's what it is. We are a divided nation politically. We're a divided nation on the COVID-19, whether or not to take the vaccine. And unfortunately, we've got players that pretty much think only about themselves. And I'm extremely disappointed in the actions of Aaron Rodgers.
Joining me now, best-selling author and star of No Safe Spaces, Dennis Prager. And Dennis, Terry Bradshaw is not alone. I put a quick list together. Stephen Smith from ESPN, Max Kellerman from ESPN, Jimmy Johnson, Michael Strahan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It's kind of a pile-on. What do you make of that?
Well, first of all, I just heard now some of the remarks of Bradshaw. And he's an ignoramus. He's a pernicious ignoramus. I very rarely call people names, but he deserves it. Ivermectin is not a horse dewormer. So the man should just shut up about things he doesn't know. He is right to say that Aaron Rodgers should have told the whole truth from the beginning, that he was not vaccinated instead of saying he was not immunized. That is a fair criticism. But the fact that he took ivermectin, I have taken ivermectin. I took it for 18 months. I got COVID 3 weeks ago. Nobody ever said it was to prevent you from getting COVID. It is to prevent COVID from being serious in your body. That's what it did. It did for me, along with hydroxychloroquine. You're not allowed to talk about the positive aspects of ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine and zinc on the internet. You're taken down by YouTube and Facebook and Twitter. There is no allowance for medical discussion on the internet. So I support Rogers in not wanting to be vaccinated and not being hated for it. I support him for taking therapeutics, but he was wrong in the original case. But Bradshaw is indefensible.
So, Dennis, I'm going to throw in a quick break here. When we come back after the break, I want to ask you a little bit about something you said. And Twitter just, you know, woof, it just went on fire. We'll be back right after this. Back now with Dennis Prager. Dennis, I got to get a final comment from you on something you said on Newsmax. You said, during the AIDS crisis, can you imagine if gay men and intravenous drug users, had they been pariahs the way the non-vaccinated are, but it would have been inconceivable. Do you really mean that?
Well, you didn't read the whole quote, and I don't blame you, because the people who want to attack me didn't supply the whole quote. The rest of the quote is, and it should have been inconceivable. They should not have been made pariahs. Just want to add what I actually said.
But they were. In fact, I mean, they really were made pariahs, right?
Yes, they were. I said that. Yeah. They're just not pariahs like the unvaccinated. There were no mandates that a person with AIDS, let alone all gays, could not enter a restaurant or could had to be fired from their job.
Gosh, they were beaten.
I'm sorry?
Well, I've only got 15 seconds left till the end of the show, but can we have another discussion on this? Will you come back and be on the show again?
Yeah.
I've got 13 seconds till we're off the air, but I do want to chew that up a little bit more with you. And I appreciate you.
I
appreciate you correcting the record as well. All right. Dennis, thank you. I'll see you again. Thanks, everyone.